Introduction. God's Gracious Providence. What are thought to be chance occurrences are just so many proofs of heavenly providence, especially of fatherly kindness. John Calvin. I, being in the way, the Lord led me.
Those who have sat under the teaching ministry of Dr. Panosian for even a short time have doubtless heard him borrow the ancient testimony of Abraham's servant as his own. Genesis 24:27 rejoices in God's providence, his orchestration of even minor events to accomplish his purposes. With apologies to the bard, there are no slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. God is sovereign over everything, from international affairs to personal affections. Even when we are unaware of it, as most of the world is, God is ordering even the minute details of the universe to accomplish his purpose and display his glory. Dr. Panosian has taught thousands that the fingerprints of the sovereign God are all over human history. More than 20 years ago, he wrote the following regarding the benefits of history for the Christian student.
If history is the record of God's incessant supervision over men and nations, the memorial of God's mercies, his blessings for obedience, and his judgment for disobedience, the working out of his sovereign pleasure, ruling and overruling the free but responsible wills of men, then it is to be studied because of what it is. History shows the providence of God, his seeing before, on behalf of his people.
Ed Panosian's story is a story of God's providence. Most know Dr. Edward M. Panosian as a professor at Bob Jones University in Greenville, South Carolina, where he taught history for over half a century. Dr. Panosian is an icon. His wisdom, his passion, his appearance, his wit, his impossibly patient speaking pace, and his voice, what a voice, all combined to make him a larger-than-life legend. He has taught more students than any other professor in the history of BJU. He is almost universally respected, but he is not well known. As a man, I mean, not an icon. My goal is to remedy that. The Panosian story is challenging to tell. It is the story of a man, but it is also the story of his ancestors, their homeland, and their oppressors. In fact, the book will be roughly half over before its principal character is even born. The two halves of the story may feel like two very different books that have been pasted together. They are not. Dr. Panosian and I believe that understanding his story is impossible without understanding the story of his parents and their nearly miraculous survival. For that reason, inserted throughout the story are pertinent histories of the Armenians, of the declining Ottoman Empire, of World War I, and of the Armenian Genocide, 1915 through 1920. These aren't diversions from the history of the Panosian family. They are intrinsic to it. Much of the Panosian story takes place in Turkey. I was greatly helped by a trip I took to Turkey in 2008, little knowing that that journey was preparing me for this one. More providence. Even more helpful, in the months surrounding the writing of this book, I consumed many insightful resources on the Armenian Genocide and World War I. I've relied upon many respected historians, but I found four books to be especially helpful. First, Armenia's Golgotha, the memoirs of genocide survivor Grigoris Balakian, which provide an eyewitness account of the Turks' treachery. Next, The Burning Tigris, written by Grigoris Balakian's great-nephew, Peter Balakian. This is perhaps the most thorough book on the history of the genocide, beautifully written by an author who won a Pulitzer Prize in 2016 for his poetry. Next, Ambassador Morgenthau's Story, a first-hand account of the genocide written by the U.S. ambassador to Turkey during the genocide. This is especially useful because it was written by a respected American official and because Morgenthau is neither an Armenian nor a Christian, and therefore cannot be charged with either of those biases as an author. Morgenthau labored valiantly, though ultimately in vain, to protect the Armenians. Finally, The 40 Days of Musa Dagh, an epic 900-page historical novel by noted Austrian author Franz Werfel, published in 1933. This book did a great deal to make the public aware of the terrors of the genocide during the years following World War I. Ironically, Morgenthau and Werfel were both Jews, and their writings about the genocide are haunting in light of the horrors which their own people would face less than a generation later. The details of the genocide are grotesque, and they are hard to read. Grigoris Balakian believed that the terrors the Armenians suffered at the hands of the Turks were unprecedented,
the likes of which had never before been recorded in even the bloodiest pages of history.
The cruelty of which humans are capable is apt evidence of our depravity. I've shared enough details to accurately depict the terrors of the genocide, without piling story upon story in sickening succession. If the details I share seem excessive, know that I exercised considerable restraint. Although the book describes unthinkable cruelty, it would be unjust to paint all Turks or all Muslims with one broad brush. When I speak of the atrocities of the Turks, I do so with an eye on the leaders of the Ottoman Empire at the turn of the 20th century, when the genocide took place. It would be unfair to characterize an entire nation by the actions of its leaders, much less by the actions of leaders who ruled 100 years ago. To repurpose Romans 9:6, not all Turks are Turks, as I use the term in the book. Humane Turks and kind Muslims existed then as now, as the book will demonstrate. Along those lines, one might wonder what Dr. Panosian feels toward those responsible for the deaths of many of his family members and the decimation of his people. He provided the answer in a booklet he authored 15 years before I undertook this project.
I hate no one except the devil and his works, though in the flesh I might have reason to hate. While I am an Armenian American, I have no hatred. I am a redeemed Christian. My parents came to know the Lord. I hate no one.
As I interviewed the Panosians and asked their close acquaintances to share their memories, I realize that there are scores of former students who have vivid memories of things Dr. Panosian said and did. I use social media to reach out to graduates of BJU, asking them to share some of their favorite recollections of Dr. Panosian. I was unprepared for the deluge of nostalgia, affection, and gratitude that my request unleashed. For thousands of people, the Panosian story feels very much like their own story. That's the depth of attachment they feel. For that reason, I've sprinkled many of their memories throughout the book. Their fondness for their beloved professor reminded me of what a privilege and responsibility was mine to be researching and writing this book. I hope it will serve the BJU family well, while also engaging those previously unfamiliar with Dr. Panosian. The Panosian story needed to be told while its principal character was still able to share it. It is one of suffering and survival, of cruelty and courage. Above all, it is a story of God's gracious providence, as Dr. Panosian has reminded us again and again.
History is his story.
May he be glorified through its telling. Soli Deo Gloria.
Part 1. In Green Pastures. Chapter 1. A Pincushion to Prize. 1987. Elmira, New York. Behold also the ships, which though they be so great and are driven of fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor listeth. James 3:4.
Little objects may contain massive memories. That's true in this story. An egg, a pouch of tobacco, a dried fig, a coal box, a shoe, a collection of jewelry, a sum of not quite $25, an assassin's bullet, a fist full of candy, a stick, a magazine advertisement, a perfectly fitted costume, a doctor's prescription, a hospital bed, a bicycle or two, a custom-made chair, a scrapbook, some 3x5 index cards, and most important of all, a pincushion. Sarah Panosian, the mother of Ed Panosian, entered paradise on March 2, 1987, almost 3 months after her family had gathered around her to celebrate her 85th birthday. She underwent surgery to treat her stomach cancer, and she awoke in the presence of her Savior. On a shelf in her home sat her most prized possession, a simple pincushion. Her son describes it, slowly, his voice swelling and cracking with emotion.
"It was a little pincushion, a sewing cushion, which looked like an apple, made of felt, stiffened. It had a removable top, and inside were pins and so forth. She kept it to her dying day."
Sarah Panosian, Sarah Momjian before her marriage to Nazar Panosian, had seen brutal and beautiful things during her 85 years on Earth. She had witnessed the worst and best that humans could do. She had experienced unspeakable sorrows and unexpected joys. So what made this object, a simple pincushion, such a treasure? It held more than pins. It held hope, and it had for almost 80 years.